It now gives me great pleasure to introduce Trish, our speaker for tonight.
My time's running out. I want to thank Melissa for letting me come and share my experience drinking Hope tonight. And the birthday people, oh, thank you. The birthday people, happy birthday. I think that's incredible. The 4 years and 8 years, I think that's incredible. I used to be there, so I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to get more time. So my sobriety date is March 15th of 1979. So I'm 43 working on 44. And I'd like to say Happy Father's Day to all the fathers. I think that's incredible that they have a day out of the year that they could be recognized as dads. Okay. The B-Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us what happened and what it was like, much like now. I'm going to talk a little bit about what happened and what it's like, much like now. I probably started drinking around 18 years old, and I drank for oblivion. I didn't know why until after I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ended up step one as one of the greatest steps there are up there, and they're all good, all very good. And I didn't want to remember the demoralization, the degradation. I was too ashamed. I had too much pride, too much ego. I can't turn around and tell you what happened to me. I was all picking up the first drink or two. And so I'd go to jail time after time. And sometimes I wasn't too nice, and the police officer would make those handcuffs real tight. And I did get one police officer pulled me over and he says, "Man, did you get out of your car?" "Get out of my car." And he says, I'm going to have you do a sobriety test. I said, "Oh, Lord," just what I said to myself. And so I walked about three steps, and that was it. And then I go this way. And he says, "Well, I'm sorry, man. I think we're going to have to take down." I said, "Just a minute, sir. This road is not flat." "Can I do it on the sidewalk?" So I got on the sidewalk, same thing happened. I feel okay. But you know, I never knew until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, it was that first drink that got me there. And I used to think that maybe I could get rid of this chunk of my life. I needed that chunk of my life to even be where I am today. Realizing I am an alcoholic, my life definitely become unmanageable. I come from a father and mother and there were 2 girls. And when I was probably about 15 years old, my older sister went down to a place called the Pizza House in Long Beach on 101. And then she come over and talked to my mother, and she said, "Oh, you know, that's a gay place." My ears kind of lit up. And I asked where we was at, and he turned around and told me it's on the Pacific Highway. And I went there. I went there because I didn't know that there's other people like me. And that's being gay. and my mother turned around, gave me a choice of two things. She said, you can go put your name in the institution, or you go live with your dad. My dad left when I was 15 years old. So I went all the way to Tulsa, Oklahoma. They thought if they would move me away from there, that I'd be changed and I'd do all right. And I was there a few months. My dad got me a job in the hospital. And I wanted to come back to California. And he said, okay, I'll take you back. And I asked him about three times. He said, I'll take you back. I'm going on vacation. And I'll take you all the way to Mexico and you take the bus there, I swear. I said, okay. And I'll tell you a little about my father, because this is something that I had to work on, the steps to change the way that I felt about him. And what happened was, he went to go do his washing, and he asked me if I would go in and wash with him, and I said, I just didn't step in the car. And he said, well, all you have to do is put your pants in there and put the clothes in there. I said, I think I'll stay in the car. So he went and did his washing. He came back out, and he was driving a coupe. And he had put some of his dirty laundry behind the driver's seat on the floor. I didn't know that. And I'm gonna get you to go right now. And when I did take the bus to the bus station, he told me this. I wouldn't feed you or the family a pile of shit on a slab of cement if you're starving to death. My mother was different. She loved me a whole lot, and I loved her incredibly. And when I started drinking more and more, I started getting blackouts. Then I ended up with a DUI. Here I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, come to the meeting, and I sat behind somebody like Bob. Somebody was bigger and they could hide me. No offense. Sorry. And I kind of slipped down on my chair, you know, didn't want to see me. Oh, did we have any newcomers? I wasn't going to raise my hand. And so I came into Alcoholics Anonymous probably about 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks before, when they asked for newcomers, I raised my hand as I'm an alcoholic. And that was the beginning of my journey to learn how to live sober. And you'll have that same opportunity if you come to meet and learn to listen or to learn. And I realized when I was sober that when I picked up the drink, I couldn't care about me. I didn't care about you, or did I care about my family? Something that I learned about myself. And I thought maybe, you know, I wonder if this program can work for me. And then I came up with another idea about a month later. I said, I think I'll stay. And I stayed, and I continued to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I continued to come to meetings. It's not because I'm not okay inside myself. What it is, I have to stay teachable. And I stay teachable. Because I know where that first teaching pool will take me, and I know there's just not enough alcohol out there for me to drink. I'm probably about 14 months sober. I said, I don't think I'm going to go ask this lady. She's been my sponsor. And real nice lady, real caring lady. And I said, you know, you could be my temporary sponsor. And the reason I told her temporary because I wanted to keep her on the bay. And then I realized a few months later is that I was lying to myself. I needed a sponsor that I could go to. And so I thanked her for being my sponsor. And I got another sponsor. And that's when I had for 32 years of my sobriety. I think it was in my 28th year of sobriety, I went into Long Beach and there at the VA. And to go visit her. She was too dying. We went to visit her, and as I visited her, she said, "Would you hand me that box over there?" And I got the box and I handed it to her. She said, "Here's your check. Here's the bride." What an honor. What a privilege to have her in my life. So, and those feelings come up, but it's okay to feel. I learned that it's okay to feel. And I polished my mouth, and I also learned it's okay to cry. Big people cry. Well, maybe not big people. But, never mind, we're not saying more about that. So, she being my sponsor for maybe a couple of years at the time, and my sister, called me on the phone, and I'm driving a motorcycle, and I was there in a flat vent. I didn't care whether cops was there or anything. Went to the gas station. There's four cop cars. And the reason I ran was because her husband had hit her on the shoulder with a pipe. And back then, you know, he had messed with my family kind of thing. And so, I was calling him everything, and I could cut better than a singer back then. And I threatened his life. I told him, "If you ever touch my sister again, I'll kill you." The peace officer was pretty smart. He said, "Why don't you take your sister and take her home to your home?" And I did. And here I'm all riled up about this, you know, I want to kill this guy. So I thought, wouldn't it be a good idea if I called my sponsor? I called my sponsor and told her that story. And she turned around and told me, she says, "Trish, how would you like prison?" Ooh, that got my attention. And I thought that killing him was not a good idea anymore. So that's what I learned to do, is run things by my sponsor when I didn't have an answer. My mother died about when I was 17 years sober. And back then, way before then, I thought, you know, if she dies, I'm going to drink. But see, I built the foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous. Learning to go to meetings, turning on caring about people, and I lost my train of thought. Nobody was listening. Anyway,
you want to die?
Oh, thanks. And you know, when I was 17 years sober, the phone rang, and my sister said, "You need to come quickly because I think that Mama's dying." I lived in Long Beach, she lived in Tacoma. So what I did, I got on the phone, I called this lady, her name was Angel. And I said, "Would you go with me?" She says, "Yes, I'll go with you." How easy it is for people to carry you while you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got there about 20 minutes late. She passed away, and And I asked her to hold my hand. And then I got to the door. She said, "Mom, I'll take it from here." Death is a, people are going to die. I don't want my mom to die. But I didn't drink. And every meeting that I go to an Alcoholics Anonymous, thank you, I'm building a foundation. Because I'm hearing what she's saying. I tell you, well, that was me too. Oh, I learned something new. And I would tell myself, because I knew I would hide and I wouldn't want to share. And I thought, well, gee, if I do that, I thought afterwards, if I do that, I keep telling myself. And then I was able to go ahead and call my sponsor. And it's only good to have one sponsor. And I said, somebody said, I don't know who they are, but somebody said, I have five sponsors. Oh, my Lord! It would be hard to listen to five people and picking the one that I want. No good. It's no good for me. And I sponsored people ever since I was about 3 years sober. And I love working with people, men and women. Why? Because I don't want them to find what I found. And what did I find in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? I found the steps. 1 through 12. So I could live. So I could change. And believe me, I did not want to change. You know why? I didn't want to look inside myself. I didn't want to see the lies and degradation, everything that happened to me. So I started working step one. And I had this, there's two parts to step one. I'm an alcoholic, and my life become unmanageable. And so what I did, I made a list. Get back up with that. But I told this lady that, and she wrote six things down on the list, and I said, you keep it and you read it. I see her about 6 years later. She gets out her wallet, she opens up, takes that piece of paper out, and she still has those six things on the list. This program works. It really does. But you're going to have to work it. And how do you learn? By coming to rooms like this. And about 7 years ago, I found out that I had cancer. And the doctor said, well, do radiation and then you need it will operate. And I said, forget it. I said, you do the operation first. Then I have chemo and radiation. So which I did for 2 weeks. They give me chemo, go to another part, give me radiation. So God's been good to me. He spared my life. And as you can see, I'm still alive. And they told me stage three, and when I went back, they said, I'm sorry, but it's not stage three, it's stage four. But see, I have to build a foundation. Nothing could go with this. God, I don't want to live that kind of sobriety in that way. Because I don't want to keep coming back to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came in on March 15, 1979, I wanted to drink so bad when I came in. And the obsession was in my mind. And they were meeting, they turned around again, usually talk about the surrender prayer. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to use that surrender prayer so I don't have to turn around and pick up that drink. Now probably anywhere from 6 to 9 months of sobriety, I got so heavy and I wanted to drink so bad that I thought, I can't do it for 24 hours. I can't do it for an hour. Why don't you try 5 minutes? I thought, no, I'm going to drink. And I went down to 1/16 of a second. I won't drink for 1/16 of a second. And I didn't drink. The power in that surrender prayer. It was about a God loving us and keeping a handle on us. And for a drink of water. So finally that obsession went away. And as I sat in these rooms, I thought, Chris, you got to start talking to somebody. So I told on myself in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the fear came. And what the fear told me is, did you find out what they said? What was the answer? And I was afraid that they would ask me what happened. So I learned to go ahead and speak out. This is the language of the heart. And 12 to 12 turns around and tells us the ego and the pride have to be smashed. Because that ego and that pride for me would keep me on a downhill spiral. And thank God that I realized that. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about my sponsor. And I asked her if I could turn around and say something, and she said yes. My sponsor, her name was Maureen, and she had 3 women in the car. Of course, she'd been drinking. I wrecked the car, and all 3 of the women in the back seat died. And in 1955, they put her in a wheelchair, and she was to live the rest of her life in a wheelchair. But you know, that didn't stop her from giving the program away. But it turned around and told me how progressive this disease is. A big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says you just worse, it never gets better. And that's very true. That malt liquor that I started out with wasn't cutting it. So I went for hell and hell, something strong. I didn't put it on ice. I didn't mix it with anything. I wanted it straight. But then I started hiding how much I was drinking. So I put coffee oil. I put whiskey with grapefruit, not grapefruit juice, not too bad. So I guess you have enough. It's probably not that bad at all, right? And my daughter, I was also a bar drinker. And I went to the bars, and I drank fast and I bring hard. God, I have to go to the bathroom. I got up to the wall. I don't know if I'm going to make it. Because I know that I can't walk. Those things that I told you about what happened to me as a result of many becomes an asset in my life. I haven't had to do any of that for 43 years of sobriety. Stay your time. How are these steps going to turn around and help me? First, I had to learn to work them. I had to listen to people. I had to read the big book and see what the big book says about resentments. And some years ago, probably more than 25 years ago, I learned how to work the steps out of the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous. Because what I'm going to be putting on the paper when I write is the powerlessness that I had over alcohol. And the things that happened to me as a result of not picking up the gun. Anyway, I wrote my first four steps, took it to my sponsor, and I told Maureen, I said, here, you read it. She says, I'm sorry, Trish, it don't work that way. You read it. And I wept through it. This was a lot of, again, one more time, demoralization and degradation. But you helped me along my way in sobriety. I'll tell you a real quick story, and I'm going to talk something about the steps. I had a real bad experience about 14 years old. My mother would ask me if I would take the romaine and break it up, put it in a bowl. I said, sure. Well, I wasn't breaking it up a small enough. My dad came over, and I had such a traumatic experience of what he did and how I did it. I wasn't going to pick up my food. I wasn't going to cook. I wasn't going to do nothing. So my sponsor told me, I went over the house, she told me, she says, why don't you come over and we'll make cold cuts? And I asked her, what's cold cuts? Because I didn't know. And she said, well, what you can do is you can take the bread, you're going to take some bologna and cheese, and some mayonnaise, and maybe we can have some chips and soda. And the thing about this story is that she gave me permission to not go all the way. She says, Trish, if you're getting hung up about this, it's okay to quit. But I didn't quit. Sponsors can pull you out of despair. But the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous is really important if you read it, and read it, and read it some more. There's a lot of stuff in there. It taught me how to treat people when they said, well, I'm helpful to some and harmful to none. It taught me a lot of stuff. But anyway, there's the steps. Powerless unmanageability. So it's going to be almost like I have a resentment attached to it. And I said, what's the resentment? And I looked in about verses, and I looked in another dictionary. I could not understand what they were saying about resentment. But I found out how the big book about the Alcoholics Anonymous, what it is. And I'll talk a little bit about my dad, because he was one of the ones that I did many of resentments. I don't have any more. But I hated him. Resentment was that he wasn't a dad. And as I continued, his wife called. Turned around and told somebody else, the somebody else told me that that he was dying. So I flew back with my mom, went to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and after I did the steps, I was able to hold his hand with love and compassion. That's what the steps do. So, I'll tell you one more quick story to show you how much I hate you. He had a business in Los Angeles, and he had the three girls, so it's night time, to go with him to the store, and I asked him, what do you want me to do? So I said, stop, sure, okay. Well, the phone was probably as far as it is to the end of the fence down there. It rained. And then he comes back after he gets off the phone and he says, why didn't you tell me? And my reply is, tell you what? And he took his fist right into my mouth. But she had to let all that go. I think the steps are on what page, 50, 58? I'm going to have to get the book. Anyway, big book of Alcoholics Anonymous turns around and tells us that we resent who another calling is what the cause of my resentment was. And what it was is that and tell me where I was at.
Who's the cause of the resentment?
Huh?
Who's the cause of the resentment?
Okay, right. The name is the cause of my resentment. So I put my dad down, and I put the cause that I hated him. He wasn't, I just said he wasn't a dad, because I could have more resentment than just one of him. But I learned that I only take the one resentment, not the all the others, and incorporate it. You won't be able to see the forest for the trees. This is an incredible program. It'll change it for the better. And if you compare yourself to yourself, you've already come a long way. So don't compare yourself to somebody who's got a lot of time and that's what I learned. So anyway, close this out. I cried every bit of the way until my sponsor did it. Because it got it clear. What I put on paper. And to get back with the resentments, this is my opinion. I have to have a cause of something before I can have courage to do that. What is my resentment? That's the cause. Because in 6, we ask God to move all these defects of character. And I believe they work when I see them, and I don't like the effect of the way that I feel. And kind of 6 and 7 kind of go together. Because it's a shortcoming. When tired of God, we have no longer to take your character and humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. So how does my shortcomings go? I had to realize my dad had just done fine whatever he was doing. And what I found out was it was I that had the feeling. I was the one being affected. And nobody can turn around and tell me to be angry. You don't have that kind of power. So, the third column is the effect. What happened to me as a result of this resentment? And I only write character defects, nothing else. Just character defects. And then, after the character defects, I found out that I owed amends to the people that I had wronged. There's people in the bar that I didn't even know where they were at. But I owed them an amends. So, I just thanked bar guys because they didn't know his name. And I said, I'm really sorry for hitting you. Bad girl. And, then I put it in an envelope, and I mailed it. Didn't put no name or nothing on it, I mailed it. I actually put it in the mailbox. And I thought, well, you know, somebody's going to read that. And it might change your life a little bit. But see, it's not part of getting rid of it. And all the character defects that are mustered up because of the resentment, you did it to yourself. Nobody has that power to do it to you. And you get down to the amends. Amends can make a list, but a list is not enough. I can make a list to go get gas in my car, but what good gas if I don't go get gas? And actually, in step 9, you don't make an amends if it's going to hurt the other person. So when I was out there drinking, I set somebody else's partner. And I was like, God, I can't make an amends to him. I don't know what happened. Well, it's mine and them. So, what I did, I amended it by never doing that to nobody else. That was my name on that one. Like I said, making a list isn't enough. I have to make the amends. And if I can make them in person, I'll make them in person. My sister, my older sister, I couldn't make the amends directly to her because I went out to her grave. And I told her Gay, that was her name, Gay Ann. And I told Gay, I said, you know, I know I'm real sorry. I'm real sorry for me being out of your life. And I'm sorry that I wasn't closer to you. But see, Willie said you don't care about that stuff until you 100% know without any reservation that you're an alcoholic, you're going to make it. But if you have 99.9, you might go back out there. So get your sponsor, and not in name only. That don't work. Get you somebody that I like what that person is. You know? And if they've had the opportunity to really get into the flip, because step 12 just says, after having had a spiritual awakening as a result of your steps, then I carry the rest of the alcoholic crystal center. So once until I get through all those steps, I don't know what's going to happen. I've sponsored a lot of people in my sorority. We still can't sponsor quite a few. Can I call you at 3 o'clock in the morning? You bet. Because I want you to stay sober so you can find what was supposed to give it to me. Now, how did I get all this? I'll tell you, I got that. Before I made it into Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted to quit so bad. They didn't know how. And so I asked my Heavenly Father, which is called Christ, to help me. And you know what happened? Two women. Folks that ran to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went with them because one of them was having a birthday. And I thought, well, I wonder if I asked her what, you know, how many years is going to have a birthday. And she said, 5. I said, why don't I step with a 10-foot pole? She went to that meeting to celebrate her 5th year of sobriety. And what I saw there, I'll never forget. I panned around the room and I looked. And I saw light in your eyes. And I knew there was none in mine. She dropped us. 4:33. But I had the willingness to keep going forward. It's okay to step one step backwards, but you don't want to stay there. There's a lot of good stuff in the big book. But on 118, if you read it, it'll tell you how to have a relationship with your partner. There's other parts in the big book that comes from the story. And it says that we do the steps daily. We have to take step one, because I don't want to drink, but daily. I don't have enough time to tell you all of what I've learned. But I know that I can live inside myself, which I couldn't do when I was drinking. And being able to live inside myself with peace, a quiet heart, I sleep very well at night. In fact, I never do that, so that was a mind thirty this morning. I usually get about 10:30. I must have needed, you know, I felt good. My higher power knows what I need. And I'll close with this. If you have a problem, go to your sponsor, run it by it. And after you do that, go to your highest power, which is Jesus called Christ, and what would you say? Because that's what's going to give me the foundation. Because I was bulletproof when I came in. But I learned how to live and how to turn around and treat people. In fact, I was out longest, been a few years, and this guy called me Red. You don't call me Red. I went over to turn and got a hold of his shirt. I pulled him into me, and he said, never call me Red again. That is bad. I don't like to call Red. I call me Red. And the neat thing about it, I wasn't into the story. There was a meeting. It was going to start. I went and sat down to go to the meeting. He'd come over to me, and he squatted down. He said, I want to tell you I'm so sorry for what I did. What a healing experience. And I said, I'm really sorry for what I said to you and I treated you. And accepted my news right then and there. Thank you.
All right. right, let's give Trish another round of applause. Thank you, Trish, for coming out and speaking tonight. Anybody who would like to come up after the Serenity Prayer to take the speaker is more than welcome.